All right, everybody, welcome to Game Over number 6. And how are you doing, Arthur? I am a little bit sick today.
I went to my parents' place and I completely forgot the tap water is undrinkable compared to Washington. So I got food poisoning. For some reason, I had a consistent streak of eating out to places and receiving food poisoning. So I have been food poisoned in the past 2 weeks. So not only am I jet lag, but I am actively taking damage from toxicity.
Woo! I'll say this. I just got sick recently. My wife's been sick for like 3 days. So I may have even worse sickness coming up for me because I think I just got it. But I'm actually pretty happy these days because I think I mentioned on the last pod that I was starting a 7-day water only fast.
But my wife was
arguing that I should only do 3.5 days. So I negotiated with her. I got off of it yesterday at about 5.5, close to 6 days. And yeah, it's great to be eating again. So I'm pretty happy.
How was the fasting? Like, did you like,
you know, I've done it so many times now, usually been 7 days, but it's a lot easier for me now. When you first start, it's tough. I don't follow any of the conventions. Like, people are like, oh, you should be so careful. Take electrolytes. Don't exercise. Do this, do that. It's like, nah. I just go hardcore. I try to do my regular routine. I'll exercise, and I'll just drink water and it's fine.
Right.
Anyway.
I mean, like, the way I view these things is like, okay, if like humans 2,000 years ago is, then need like electrolytes or Gatorade.
Exactly.
I'm sure I can do it just fine.
Yeah. Our ancestors regularly had periods where they didn't eat. I mean, even like, no, I once asked my dad how often he ate meat when he was young. He's like, never, like once a week. You know what I'm saying? Like the diets that we have in our society today are nothing like our ancestors and people in the past. It's a completely
they didn't even
different
eat much back then. I think it's a relative time period where we're just having so much food.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's 2024.
Yeah, it's 2024. Super excited. I actually talked about in the newsletter a little bit about suffering and how I've been going through suffering at work, personal life, things like that. I think that period's about to end soon, so I'm getting more and more excited for the year. And I also wanted to announce that we're going to try to do this thing live next week. So for anyone listening, Sunday, 10 a.m. PST, we're going to record live. And so to our 2 subscribers, I think our subscriber count went up a little bit. I posted about it in the newsletter, so I think we got a few more subs from that. So I don't know how many we got now. I don't know if the other subscriber was you, Arthur, but
I don't think I'll subscribe. I'll make sure I subscribe.
Okay, now we'll have 3. No, but I think it's higher now because I posted about it. Look, for our audience, hey, we're just a couple guys trying to do something cool. We're experimenting. But I will say if we do get popular, it would be an amazing, amazing achievement to go from two subs to something more. Although on the podcast side, we get many more on the podcast, but, just because podcast does better generally. Anyway, let's not bore our audience and jump into the news. We got a bunch of news that we're going to cover today just to give people a quick, overview on what we're going to be talking about. Savvy Games. They talk about how they're going to be investing a lot of additional money. We're going to talk about an article about the future of the iPhone gaming, how it's in trouble. Somebody's talking about personal roller coaster job hunting. Kim Kardashian mobile game shutdown. Netflix considering ways of making money differently for their games business. It looks like we've got, you're covering predictions for 2024 gaming by Bloomberg. Looks like Star Citizen has a 48,000 DLC and looks like a game studio shut down due to cyber attacks. And oh yeah, dude, season 2 of Arcane.
Yeah.
I am so looking forward to that. So
that today.
Let's get started. So first article is Savvy Games Group, quote, approximately 75% of our capital allotment has not yet been invested by pocketgamer.biz. Now, for those of you in the audience that don't know, Savvy Games is a Saudi group who basically is aiming to become a major global player, if not the biggest mobile global gaming player in the world. They have the backing of the Crown Prince. And so essentially, this is a group that has unlimited resources. And to date, they've made a number of pretty big ticket acquisitions and investments. And let me list off some of the bigger ones that are publicly known. So Scopely, so Savvy Games, they acquired Scopely 2023 for reportedly $4.9 billion. That's been their largest acquisition to date. They also have a stake in Nintendo. They acquired a 5% stake in Nintendo for about for $3 billion. ESL Gaming and Faceit. So the group acquired ESL Gaming and Faceit, merging them to form what's called the ESL Faceit Group. I think the acquisition cost has not been announced there. They also have a $1 billion stake in the Embracer Group. And they also have a stake in VSPO, reportedly bought at $265 million. So in addition to that, they also have other stakes in gaming public gaming companies such as Capcom, Nexon, NCSoft, as well as Activision Blizzard, Take-Two, and Electronic Arts. So we're talking about probably, you know, I mean, at least probably something like $10 billion right there. And they're saying that's 25% of their capital allotment. So we may have another $30 billion to go, which is crazy, right? And this, their stated goal, based upon this article and a interview with their CEO, states, quote, "We are actively building a strong games ecosystem and have ambitious plans for localizing the games and esports sector by 2030. Our goals include transforming Saudi Arabia into a global hub for game development and positioning it as a worldwide epicenter for esports." So they're going to go big on gaming. They're going to go big on esports. And they also mentioned that the three areas that they're looking at, game developers and publishers, two esports organizations, and three, supporting the ecosystem in the kingdom, which I take to mean like trying to bring folks into Saudi Arabia to work. And, you know, there were, the funny thing here is that there were kind of statements made by one of my friends, Mate Lanceric, mm-hmm. about the true profitability of Scopely's Monopoly Go. Like on the face of it, it quite didn't make sense. If you're like a UA expert or you kind of see the monetization profile of the game, how it could be profitable in the context of Saudi publicly stating with infinite resources that they want to be number one. Anyway, I think the main point here is that Savvy and Saudi Arabia is intent to become a number one player. We saw what they did in the golfing world with LIV Golf.
Right.
And these guys are coming. You know what I mean? They've got infinite money. They don't really care about profitability in the short term, for sure. They know that their oil money is running out. And I think for the gaming industry, what we need to know is that their actions could dramatically distort normally functioning market dynamics based upon their actions in the gaming market. And ultimately, you know, we live in a world where money talks. So they are going to, I mean, they're already disrupting the market, and we're going to see what happens in the future. But, you know, it's like Deion Sanders says, you know, we coming, they coming. So I don't, do you have any thoughts on this, Arthur?
I'm just reading this article right now. It's just so wild to like, they're talking about their staff members and financial backings, you know, particularly here in North America, you got like investors, especially like Tencent. But here they just straight up say, with the support of our chairman, His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince. And I'm like, how do you compete with a company like that? They got infinite money. Yeah. It's wild. If you scope out, you see what I do there? If you scope out their social media, they like made a post in 2016, we raised $55 million. And now they're like making that like a second from the Crown Prince. Like, it's wild how far they grew. And Monopoly goes, what, number one revenue in the mobile market?
I mean, I think we've been covering it. I don't know for the year, but I think it's been over the past few months. It's generally like they have been number one worldwide at times, but they've been in like a death race with Royal Match. So Dream Games Royal Match has been, they've been kind of alternating number one, number two. Now, I don't think based upon, I actually think that the economics of their game is not as good as Royal Match. Hopefully they don't get mad at me too. They're definitely mad at my friend Mate. But anyway, we're so small. None of those guys are going to right now. None of those guys are going to hear my comments right now. But I was on a podcast with Mate where we talked about Monopoly Go and some of the irregularities behind the profile and how they are so profitable or how they are so successful. If the objective is also to be profitable.
Well, I think they already have. I don't even think they need profit. I think they're just trying to be on the radar of everyone's.
They want to be number one. Duration.
I mean, already are number one. It's literally a pay to win thing in real life.
Yeah. All right. So second news article. So it's called "The Future of iPhone Gaming is in Trouble," and this is an article by Digital Trends, and it basically starts as follows: quote, "It will run console games," they said. "The experience will be amazing," they said. Well, the real experience lands somewhere between half decent and terribly underwhelming. So the main point, sorry, I'm working through the sickness. But anyway, the main point of the article is that Apple has a vision of effectively turning iPhones into consoles. And in this case, we got, you know, a whole stack of hardware being used for this, like the new A17 Pro Silicon, new pixel dense OLED screen, things like that. However, the author argues that the experience is just not the same. You still can't get the same frame rate, apparently, according to this author, and still have input limitations without keyboard and mouse. Hence, you also, to have a good experience, the author argues, you also have to buy a controller with the phone. And so based on this article, the author is arguing that you get a subpar experience for a really high cost. And the big question the author is asking is why? Do players really need a console experience on a phone or not? So Arthur, I'd like to ask you what you think, but you know, I think the question I want to ask you is, do iPhones need to be able to replace your console? Because, and look, I can understand Apple's perspective. Right. This is all the major phone manufacturers, from what I've been hearing, are having problems with new additional sales. Apple in particular seems to be slowing down a little bit. Anecdotally, you know, I skipped the iPhone 15. I'm happy enough with my 14. A lot of friends have skipped generations. And so I realize that Apple is looking for reasons to make consumers want to buy the next iPhone. I don't know, Arthur, what do you think?
Well, I, for one, did not skip out on an iPhone 15. But even with like the best flagship iPhone right now, my gaming experience with the latest AAA titles come out to the iPhone. I mean, I get what this article is saying. I completely agree with it. The problem is there's no immersion. It's hard to feel immersed when you have like controller layouts on your screen the entire time. It's annoying. And it just, the gameplay doesn't feel fluid or smooth. It's not built. It's like what we talked about last week regarding like those esports competitive games like Rainbow Six or Valorant on mobile. Just like, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel fun. It just feels more of a workout to get it as fluid as it can be on like desktop or console platforms. It's awesome. It's cool that we have these advanced graphical games on iPhones. I remember when having Pool on my iPhone 4 was amazing, or Subway Surfers, but now I've got Resident Evil, the remake, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And Rainbow Six coming out to iPhone is pretty cool too, but like, it's so niche. I'm not even sure if there's a market for it.
Yeah, I also agree with you. I mean, it's like one way you can kind of think about it is kind of like the difference between watching something like TV versus a movie, right? A console is like watching a movie, and mobile phone is like watching TV or watching something on the web or something like that, right? So like, it's just a different experience. And I think the context in which you're playing, like if you're, you know, on the subway, or if you're out at a restaurant, or you're waiting in line, it's just the play pattern is different. And so I totally get Apple's intentions. They obviously want a reason for their consumers to buy the next iPhone. But I also agree with the author. I think that, you know, this initiative and this focus is likely not the right move. And, you know, there's going to be better graphics, always great. But I think you've got, you know, limiting returns as you push the graphics and things like that more and more on phones.
I guess just the casual experience is way better, because I guess the environment you use your phone to play games is always a very casual environment. It's not like you sit down in your gamer chair with your LED keyboard and like ready to immerse yourself. It's not the same as like playing on the subway, trying to play Valorant on the subway in New York City.
And I don't know. We might talk about Dragon Quest Monsters Dark Prince later, but like that's an old school experience with really shitty graphics, right? And it's still like still all right. So anyway, all right. So next article, my personal roller coaster of job hunting and growth in the games industry. This is an article that came out from PocketGamer.biz, and the author, I can't pronounce this dude's name, something like Ole Produkson, but he talks about he has been jobless since 2019. Despite 10 years of experience at the time and with work experience that he, and basically what he called a stellar portfolio working at companies like Unity and Activision Blizzard. And he notes that more than 11,000 people were let go in 2023. I believe the statistics that we cited last week in our podcast last week was 9,000. So, you know, still a lot, whether it's 9,000, 11,000, whatever it is. But you know, with him, when he first became jobless, he started leaning into just, you know, starting newsletter, becoming super active on LinkedIn, thought he'd be okay. But he felt like he made some mistakes, which I wanted to highlight for our audience. First, that he thought that he needed to stop trying to be a, you know, a quote, self-centric douche rock star and talk less about himself. Second, to start participating in team projects. And three, to build a better story about his background and history rather than just going into a constant cycle of sending out a CV and applying for jobs constantly, to think more critically about the industry and that sort of thing. Now, from my own perspective, I think one of the mistakes that most people make is to Ollie's first point, not so much, I think people should talk about themselves, but more with a greater emphasis on talking about what you know, right? Like focus on your skills, focus on your projects, create, like I have a presentation online, which maybe I'll put in the show notes, but I think it's important for people to focus more on what I call a digital footprint of your past projects, what you did, what you know. So I think that if you are unemployed, don't waste time. You know, learn, work on projects, post them into a blog, not like say, hey, I'm great. It's not about, okay, well, show me why you're great, not I'm great. Why? What do you know? Give me a perspective. Show me some skills, right? Show me some projects. And I just think that 99.9% of people are lazy. As somebody who's literally interviewed like, you know, I literally over 1,000 people over the last few years, the number of people who have and who display grit is very rare. Like somebody who can actually show me like a nice website with a portfolio of work that they have or blog posts showing what they know is like that immediately puts you above 90% of the candidates. Right. And so if you have something like that, even without the qualifications, I generally give a chance to those guys. And so, Arthur, for you, I know a number of folks have lost their jobs. It's all over LinkedIn, things like that. They may be in similar situations. What do you think? Do you have any thoughts or advice on this?
Well, first things first, I'm reading this article. The caption says instead of publishing a portfolio, he started a podcast when unemployed and he thought I'd hit close to home with this podcast. But what you said is completely, absolutely right. I think persistence really pays off. A lot of people are quick to fall into this depression crevice that like, oh, I won't get a job. No one else can get a job. And I realized the key is to actually just be persistent. Because a few episodes ago, we discovered that while the market has completely fallen back, it's better than what it was pre-pandemic. So it's not necessarily like bad. It just got inflated and then quickly deinflated. Now it's massive, enormous numbers. But it's just a lot of people don't realize there's just a lot of senior time for entry level, mid-level roles. And I'm sure like over this next year, it's going to correct itself. But definitely focus on yourself and build your portfolio. Like,
yeah,
I've been doing that too. I started this podcast with you in the meantime. I've also been applying to master degrees because I'm like that bored. I've been getting certifications. I'm especially working my PMP. I just submitted my application for that. I completed 35 hours of training. So like I'm doing everything I can in my free time to make myself more competitive and give myself the edge. And that's my best advice for everyone else.
Yeah. One thing I will disagree with him about though is like you can get a job through starting a podcast, but the scale matters, right? So like the podcast I started This Week in Games for Deconstructor of Fun, that podcast got a lot of people jobs. And got a lot of people big opportunities who became co-hosts with me on that podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you do get to a certain level of scale, it will make a difference in your career. But yeah, if you have a tiny podcast that no one listens to, then yeah, obviously that's not going to help you. But at bigger scale, you know, I got a bunch of job offers just through that and introductions and things like that. So it can help, but it's got to be popular. Period. And by the way, like I also saw there was a YouTube comment that I just saw where they mentioned, hey, you guys, I just found out about this podcast. You guys should continue. I looked up Arthur after talking about you after that UEFN podcast we did. So, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this stuff does get you visibility. But again, scale matters. So if you get to a certain scale, it'll help. All right.
Persistence is key.
Yeah, persistence is key. And yeah, we're proof of that with the number of YouTube subs that we have. I'm shocked we're still going, but hey for now, let's keep trying. Next article is Kim Kardashian, Hollywood mobile game to shut down by BBC. So Kim Kardashian Hollywood is a really great success story. It's a game that was launched by Glu Mobile in 2014. Breakout success, and BBC reporting that it is finally shutting down. So after, 9-10 years. Mm-hmm. And the game was essentially a pretty genius collaboration between Glu Mobile and Kim Kardashian. And the reason why it's a genius collaboration is that a lot of people don't know the original history behind this game, but because you've got the oldie but goodie like myself with a lot of industry connections and stories, the original game was, I think, like a Japanese game that failed, okay? So you have this game that failed, and this is one of these instances where theme matters. And so I think the big lesson that people could take away from this is, one, that a game with the right theme can be successful just based upon theme. And two, this was one of the early indications of the impact of social media and influencers on a game. So I do recommend for people who aren't familiar with the history of Kim Kardashian. Oh, third point is addressing an unaddressed audience, right? And so mobile games at that time, I think did not, there was a lot of talk at that time about going after, you know, how do you make games that go after 18 to 35 males? And this was a game that did not, that actually targeted females. And so user acquisition at the time, because everybody was targeting these 18 to 35 males, for the females was dramatically cheaper. So then you could buy users at a much lower cost. So one, theme matters. Lesson two, the impact of influencers. Number three, growth and user acquisition can make the difference in your game. So anyway, hat tip or beanie tip to Blue Mobile, Kim Kardashian. I'm not a fan of her content, but I'm a fan of her accomplishments and what she's done with what she's got. You know, some people make a lot, are able to achieve a lot with what they have, and she's a great example of that. But I do recommend for game developers to be able to look at some of these games and really try to understand, you know, instead of like, I know a lot of people were kind of poo-pooing the game and things like that. But, you know, rather than being a hater, try to understand, well, what do these guys do right? Like, what can you learn from them, these, from games like this, rather than being a hater? Okay. Arthur, you got anything before I dive into the last one that I'll cover?
This article gave me a whiplash for like back to middle school. Everyone was on this game.
Oh yeah.
Because there was like a whole subset of like people, of guys in my middle school that were like, oh, what if I received this ranking on Kim Kardashian? And maybe I'll get a girlfriend. Like that was an actual clout thing people chase. God, I can't believe it was now just shutting down. I thought it'd be dead a while ago.
Yeah, no, I think that the other thing is that there's so many games that are just like, it's something like for our audience, there's a term that Zynga popularized called Forever Franchise, where one of the things that we notice is that for free-to-play and live services, live-oriented games, these games can go on for 10, 15 plus years, right? So games like Zynga Poker, Words with Friends, there's a bunch of games like that that just like go on forever. All right, last article. I'll just cover this real quick, but it's by the Wall Street Journal. Netflix considers ways to make money from video games in potential pivot. And I think the focus of the article is really that, you know, the claim, as much as you believe mainstream media, but anyway, the claim there is that Netflix has been thinking about how do they monetize their games. And they're and kind of like the surprising thing is that they're just now considering, well, what do we do? How do we make money from our games? But I think the thing that people should understand is like, so the whole way in which Netflix got into gaming is basically because of Fortnite. And so there were some comments that Reed Hastings made about how they noticed that there was a huge correlation between the success of Fortnite and time stolen away from Netflix. And so when Fortnite's up, Netflix is down. When Fortnite goes down, Netflix goes up. And so what Reed Hastings realized is that his direct competition, and he said this publicly, is not like other like media content platforms, but games. And so I think that was the genesis behind Netflix trying to enter into gaming, because they felt like gaming was a potential future competitive threat. And also that they were also dealing with the idea of churn. So how do they lock in Netflix customers into Netflix rather than switching to whether it's Disney Plus or Hulu or whatever other streaming platform? And so they felt that if they had a portfolio of games that, you know, it's like, hey, we're on Netflix. Hey, let's switch to whatever else, you know, Amazon Prime, or whatever else. And then you're like, but little Timmy likes this game on Netflix, so we don't want to switch, right? And so I think the math, and by the way, when you're at these large numbers, you can make any math work, right? Hey, we'll reduce churn by, you know, pull a number out of your buttocks, like 2% or 1%. And then, you know, billions make sense. You know what I'm saying? So that was like the original motivation. But I think now probably my take on this in the sense that if Netflix is considering additional ways to make money from video games, then my read from this is likely that Netflix may not be seeing their initial thesis of churn reduction actually taking place. So if churn reduction isn't happening, then they're probably telling the games team, okay, hey guys, look, churn reduction isn't happening. You guys need to make some money, would be my take. So I don't know. This is the stuff I'm just talking about. That's not from the article. The article is more that Netflix is just now considering how to monetize their games. So that's a lot of speculation for me, but I don't know. What do you think, Arthur? I think we talked about, we might have touched upon this before, but for you, I mean, do you even care? By the way, do you have Netflix? Do you care about Netflix games?
I do watch Netflix, but I haven't been gaming on it. I've been sticking to my classic Steam on PC and Nintendo Switch, really.
All right. Yeah, I will say I do really like one of their games. It's called Into the Night 2. It's a great, like it's like a runner, but a shooter, like a runner shooter type game. So for anyone out there who hasn't tried it, Into the Night 2 by Netflix is hella dope. It's a great game, but I personally have not seen the way in which Netflix really makes sense with games in terms of like a combined entity right now. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they figure it out. But yeah, I agree. I don't think they figured it out quite yet. And I do think that the churn reduction thesis probably is a little bit shaky right now.
We'll see what happens with Netflix's future.
All right. But yeah, take away, Arthur. What you got?
Well, we just entered the new year, and know what better way to start the news for the new year by looking at some 5 predictions for the big video game industry 2024 by Bloomberg. According to this article, the predictions for 2024 are going to start with the Switch 2. It's going to have an unexpected twist. Which actually makes sense. The Switch 2 hasn't been received pretty well. I mean, like, people are excited for it. It's like, oh my god, it's a Switch 2. It's like going to be better performance. But people are like, what's going to make it special and worth it compared to Switch 1? And, you know, a lot of people are thinking, okay, they're going to make a VR headset for it, like make it into a full-on home console like PlayStation 5. But this article says it's continuing to become a portable console like the current Switch, but it'll come with some sort of strange quirk. The article thinks it's just going to be a console with a detachable screen itself. So pretty much becoming a home console, like a much bigger expanded Switch, which probably makes sense if it needs like higher specs for performance. Second prediction, we covered this earlier, but Saudi Arabia will go big on gaming.
That's a layup. That's not really a prediction. That's just a stated intent.
Well, they're looking to diversify beyond oil. And of course, one of the biggest investments alongside, you know, mobile gaming companies is esports itself. Yeah. They've surprisingly invested in Nintendo. And of course, yours truly, Scopely. And they want to continue that in 2024 with much more focus of producing major video game developers and publishers. Of course, Western employees have strong feelings about Saudi Arabia's human rights record. So they're kind of concerned of like how they're going to try to expand into a market that's really Western dominated. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Number 3, consolidation will return. Interest rates are set to drop and regulatory concerns less prevalent after the Microsoft Activision deal that closed back in fall. Game companies are going to return to merging and acquiring. So we're going to possibly have more monopolies this year. Maybe Microsoft will buy out every game company to compete with Saudi Arabia's portfolio. Ubisoft might be a potential seller, Electronic Arts as well. Gearbox Entertainment especially, there's a lot of rumors that they might be selling themselves to be bought.
You mean, well, they were, Gearbox was acquired by, was it Embracer?
Embracer. Embracer Group AB.
Okay. So yeah, maybe they split off or something and they get resold, who knows, but, yeah.
Well, they're coming on the market if someone has money and want to buy the Borderlands franchise.
Is it yeah, your I'm saying news. Embracer Group might sell Gearbox.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Is your company going to take over Gearbox?
I wish. Yeah, we don't have $1.3 billion, but but yeah, no. Borderlands is a great franchise.
Oh, number four. Actually, this one I'm expecting because I feel like traditional games are coming back through the pathway of indie games, as discussed last episode. Games as a service will face a reckoning. The article mentions this is a cheat of a prediction, even though they had the Saudi Arabia prediction. But it's already happening, supposedly. Companies such as like Bungie with Destiny or Epic Games with Fortnite have been making their games as a service, monetizing for years after their release. And there's just justification for this prediction is that, you know, Bungie and Epic Games both have conduct mass layoffs last year, which is indicative of the performance.
Maybe a quick comment on that. So first of all, I think that this is likely largely in the context of console gaming companies or, mm-hmm. you know, PC game companies, because games as a service, like, you know, the vast majority of successful mobile games have been free to play live operated games as a service businesses. And then if you look at the history of like a lot of the successful Korean games, I mean, they've been even operating even earlier with right. successful, you know, and that's where the free to play model originated from. So I do know we talked about how Sony's scaling back in terms of, you know, their initial predictions for games as a service titles and things like that. And I do think that a lot of the console and PC game guys have been having a very difficult time transitioning to a free to play model. Mm-hmm. And I just remember as an executive at NBC Universal and Sega, when I met with a lot of these console guys, you know, and they found out the kind of games I worked on, like, you know, 4X games and things like that, that like the look of disgust on their faces are like, oh, these loot boxes or these, you know, gotcha or whatever, you know, it's just like, ugh. And you know, it was just like, there's just a little bit of a cultural mismatch between that old guard working on console PC games. And so I do think, yeah, it makes sense that from an HD game perspective, that kind of like, they don't have the culture, right, of live operated and free to play gaming model. I mean, so yeah, I can totally imagine why, you know, we saw like Creative Assembly shut down Hyenas.
Yeah,
that's one of the studios that really hated free to play. I won't tell you about some of the discussions I have with some of those guys, but like, yeah, they did not like it.
Well, there is actually maybe another discussion not many people like, but the last prediction for 2024 is the union effort will begin for real. Quote from the article, especially with how last year was a brutal year for video game employers. And job cuts might be expected to continue throughout this year, albeit just for the first quarter, maybe the first half. The North American video game industry is potentially seeking to unionize across the entire board. And of course, it started with Activision and ZeniMax. And ZeniMax owns Bethesda and Obsidian, if you guys don't know. And of course, they're bought up by Microsoft now. And speaking of Microsoft, the biggest union moves are actually happening at Microsoft. I've been friends at Microsoft, especially at the Xbox Studios itself, and it is starting to like become the talk of town, especially as Microsoft is doing away with some more and more benefits.
I think that's going to be so. I don't like to get political, but I think that this is probably going to be the death blow for Western gaming companies, in my opinion, and I'll tell you why. So like, if you look at, we already see this happening, right? So like I had posted in my Game Makers newsletter like over a year ago, maybe a year or two ago, about kind of like the shift that's been occurring in North American game development, right? So we saw like Ubisoft Montreal moving to a 4-day work week. We saw a lot of people talking about, you know, work-life balance and things like that. And we've got these extremely high costs in the context of a world in that is becoming increasingly globally competitive. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem is, look who's kicking ass right now, right? Like, we've got miHoYo, who spent $100 million in the development of Genshin Impact already with an existing engine, okay? These are companies that work 9-9-6, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week. And I've already talked to many executives of major, major game studios who are like, secretly, I mean, now they won't tell this to their employees, but they're telling me, how the fuck are we going to compete against those guys? You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, how do they remain even remotely competitive when you've got, you know, these guys in miHoYo in particular now spending, you know, they were spending $200 million a year in live ops. And so when you go to the big end of like, we talked about the mega game projects, you're talking about a mega game project with the problems that we already discussed that were highlighted by Owen Mahoney in last week's pod, with a four-day work week, with unions against Chinese that have massive budgets that are working 9-9-6. Really? Come on, guys, do the fucking math. Right? Like, Jesus Christ. Like, this is like, we are headed toward the decline of, okay, look, we talked about it before. We still got some badasses on our side, right? On the West. We got like the dude that made Lethal. I think like the flip side of what I'm arguing about, just to argue against myself, is that I think AI could possibly help us out here, right? So either we don't unionize and we improve our work ethic, or we let AI save our asses by doing a lot of the work, which requires these huge budgets and these huge teams, where these small teams, the Valheim teams, the BattleBit teams, the Lethal Company type of solo dev can make great game experiences and compete against the big dogs. So anyway, point being that I think this is a bad move. You know, you got this guy asking, why am I still unemployed? Well, you know, I mean, I've never seen a badass unemployed. I'm probably going to get, like, fortunately, we have so few subscribers that no one can cancel me right now. But, like, I got to say, I have never seen a badass unemployed. If you are a badass, if you have skill, and especially if you demonstrate it in a website, a blog, whatever, you're gonna become employed. But I do think that this move towards unions, things like that, we're already seeing like in the electrical vehicles market, right? And as much as some people may hate Elon Musk, I mean, we're gonna have Tesla as likely the number one car manufacturing in the world. All the US car manufacturers are unionized besides Tesla. So essentially what we're going to have is Tesla and a bunch of Chinese companies leading the electrical vehicle market. And I'm afraid that that's what's going to happen to the gaming industry, is that it's going to be all Chinese.
I'm already hearing talks of like people worried like this.
Well, it's going to be Chinese. Saudi and Chinese.
Yeah. Well, I'm like hearing like regarding the car market, people are like worried like the second the Chinese are introduced into the auto market domestically in the US, it's over because their cars are cheaper. Same quality, but just way cheaper. And if not, have a more target audience appeal.
BYD hit higher volume than Tesla recently. Now, not by revenue or profit, but by volume. It's crazy. Yeah, and then you've got, you know, you've got companies like GM and Ford barely making anything and not able to achieve scale. And they're still, they don't have the same model, right? Like the technology that Tesla brings to bear in terms of like basically stamping out their cars, being fully vertically integrated, like building their own software. So like, it's just, they can't, no marketing, right? Like that's even like whatever, whether it's like 5 or 10% of your margins. I mean, it's crazy. So Yeah, I'm just afraid that's right now, all else being equal, unless AI saves us, we're headed towards a future gaming market that's controlled by the Saudis and the Chinese. Mm-hmm. But let's see.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you need like $1.3 billion to buy the Borderlands franchise. So I have this monetization idea for your games. So Star Citizen, according to IGN.
I'm not doing NFTs.
No, this is better. You're familiar with Star Citizen's like ship bundles, like $1,000 bundles, $2,000 bundles?
I'm actually not, but I will say this. I actually did a podcast interview with the CEO of that game.
RSI? Yeah, Robert?
I think so. I forgot. Yeah, well, I could look it up. If I find it, I'll put it in the show notes.
Well, the best way to make profit if you want to buy the Borderlands franchise is have a $48,000 ship bundle, which Star Citizen has introduced for people that want to back the game for the most expensive package. The $48,000 package literally gives you everything in the game, like every ship, which is 175 ships. That's roughly $250 per ship. The best part about this is that according to the article, it's called the Legatus 2953 pack. It'll come later this quarter in 2024. And it's a game that hasn't even released yet. This game has been in development for over a decade at this point. You actually need to be in the Chairman Club to even unlock the ability to buy this expansion pack, this DLC, which to achieve the Chairman Club, you need to spend $10,000 in the game. So that's a $58,000 bundle.
Yeah, you know, I think especially for people kind of not in game development and not understanding some of the economics possible, but I will say this, even in like the, like call it 2010s, 2015 or so, like for some of the bigger free-to-play games, like some of the spend that we saw from the biggest whales, like, you know, you'd like, you have these crazy like console guys, like, you can't, like, who's going to spend, you know, $300 on a game? Guess what? The biggest spenders in some of these games spent $250,000 a month. Not total, a month. You know what I'm saying? Like, people don't understand. This is like these Saudi guys have got like infinite money. It's like the biggest whales actually spend a lot. When you split out the payer buckets for some of these games, it's like people have no idea. And especially these console HD guys, they like, it just blows their mind how much people spend on some of these games. Now, I don't think that's the future. I think the future is to have friendlier monetization and to move away from whale targeting is my belief. And it's the kind of policy that I more strongly support. But that's not to say that that kind of behavior can't happen and has happened a lot in the past. And people just don't understand that.
Right. And it's just wild to realize like some of these games are being held on by just whales. On Roblox, where Roblox developers are taught like it's just a collective amount of revenue. But then you got in the real world outside Roblox, it's just people spending $58,000 for a few thousand ships.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Especially on mobile games, it's usually just like a couple big spenders that make the most money. Well, moving on to the next article. are you familiar with the horror game studio, Jukai Studio? Mm-mm. So they released a game called Stray Souls, which unfortunately met to very critical reviews after the release with Abysmal Sales 2, which was a catalyst for... As this article reads from Kotaku, horror game studio shuts down. The catalyst for them shutting down, but really what also happened to supplement that was a cyber attack recently. So in combination with some poor sales of their latest game, Stray Souls, and the cyber attacks, which according to the studio, we did everything in our power to bring Stray Souls to completion in the best possible form. But throughout the entire duration, we, our publisher staff and other publisher developer teams, and our close ones, were constantly attacked by a cyber persecutor. And some of you as our community, we're also tormented by unwanted messages and emails. So according to the lawyers, in order to not actively give a platform for these cyber attacks and continue this harassment, they are pretty much focusing on closing the studio. And the closure is coming on the same day as Publisher Versus Evil, the company that's behind the RPG franchise, the Banner Saga, if you have played that, was shut down back in December 22nd last year, 3 months after its anniversary. Everyone at Versus Evil was laid off. However, I'm pretty sure it's just a technicality, but Jukai Studios employees, despite themselves closing down the studio, no one has been laid off. Because according to the head, the team itself, the developer never functioned as a large corporation, which I am not sure what that means in that context.
Okay. Well, you know, we kind of talked about this before when we discussed like the hacks at PlayStation and things like that, but you know, it's totally true. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but look, I'm a guy who graduated with a degree in electrical engineering and computer science. When I worked at NBC Universal, the IT team, they got me 3 times. You know, like I consider myself a pretty smart dude, but they hacked me 3 times, and they're like, "Dude, gotcha again." It's like, fuck, you know. But this is like, you know, phishing attacks, all sorts of weird shit that you can do. Like these guys, these hackers, like the state of cybersecurity today is just not good enough. And so I do think, just a warning to game studios out there, when you're small, nobody cares about you. But when you're big, you really got to take this security stuff seriously. And not all of your employees are going to really care about, you know, they're not going to care about how secure and how well they secure their passwords and things like that. Some people may also remember there was a huge hack of Axie Infinity. And reportedly, the way that that happened was that one of their employees was you know, kind of like made a massive offer. Like, hey, here's our offer. Open this Word doc to see it. And so the dude opened the Word doc and then they hacked him. So just even things like that, that may seem benign, like opening Word doc, clicking a link to a website. I mean, who knows how these guys do these things, but yeah, when you're big, you really need to invest pretty vigorously. Like the Axie attack was huge. I forgot exactly how much it was, but it was massive. So I just highly recommend more game studio executives to take this stuff seriously. I don't know what a good solution looks like. I mean, I'm sure if somebody really wanted to hack my company, they probably could, you know. But you know, we've got much bigger dangers of just being successful rather than cybersecurity for now.
Right. Right. Have you played any of these studios games from Jukai Studios?
Mm-mm.
Well, I'm definitely going to be checking it out after this week because I'm curious. I never actually heard of Stray Souls, so I'm going to check it out. But the last article for today is something we all should check out. And that is, according to Tweaktown, Riot Games is teasing Season 2 of Arcane.
Yep.
I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, I saw it and I shared that news as well. Actually, one of the producers of Arcane is one of my company's angel investors. So we're pretty excited to have him with us. But like, yeah, Arcane is, I mean, man, is that such a well executed.
It's a good show.
You know, TV show. Yeah. And I was worried because I remember, I think Riot spent, you know, because Riot's a perfectionist and they're dope. They spent 7 years making the first season. So I was like, they were kind of teasing they were going to move a lot faster and try to get season two out the next year. I was like, yeah, I don't think it's coming out next year. But, you know, I would rather wait for quality. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they took their time. I think this is, yeah, absolutely one of the best TV shows ever made. And I'm happy that they're they're taking the time for the quality, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Same. Well, that wraps up all the news from my side.
I think that's it. Oh yeah. So we talked about games, right?
Yeah,
so
what are you playing?
So we talked about two games last week, Suika, which was a number one selling downloaded game on Nintendo for 2023. I played it. It's all right. It's like a puzzle game. You like drop fruits, and then depending on the fruits you drop, they kind of combine. You know, it was kind of fun, but I don't know. I personally like other games a lot more. And then I did get Dragon Quest Monsters Dark Prince. Mm-hmm. It's okay. It's not for me. It's not as good as some of the older games. It's a lot more grindy. In my opinion. And then I think you have to get to the point where you're like doing synthesis and combining monsters for it to get funner. But like, it's a little bit too grindy for me. But to the point that we spoke about, it does kind of prove that you can have a great game experience without the great graphics, right? Like, it's still the old school graphics for this game. And like it's fine.
Last episode, you don't need a big budget for a successful game.
Yeah.
And speaking of lack and big budget, the games I've been playing, actually the only game I've been playing with the less time I have this weekend after coming back from my home for the holidays was Suika as well. Okay. I am basically just repeating what you said. It's just a puzzle game, but I can see why it was number one Nintendo. It's a casual game for everyone to enjoy, you know, something fitting for phones. Unlike Resident Evil or Death Stranding. But that's pretty much been it for me. I am going to definitely play Dragon's Quest. I really want to. I didn't even know it was a new one.
Yeah. Oh, and maybe the last point I'll make is that I know last week I talked about trying to find good co-op games. And I saw a LinkedIn post from Ninel Anderson, who's a CEO at engineering outsourcing studio called Devoted Studios. But she had a great post, in my opinion, that talked about good co-op games. And she listed a bunch of good ones that I'm going to maybe try out some of these as well. But she mentioned Baldur's Gate 3, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Moving Out 2, Diablo 4, which I've also been playing, Sackboy Big Adventure, Overcooked, Unravel 2, and It Takes Two.
Yeah, I love It Takes Two. It's a great game.
Oh, really?
Sackboy Adventures. They're wonderful games. The developers of It Takes Two made a less family-friendly version of a game like that called A Way Out. It's a really good crime story game. Highly recommend it too.
All right. Nope. All right, Arthur. I think we got it. So Absolutely. Hopefully next week I'll be a little less sick. And we're gonna, you know, if you are listening to this point, join us next week, guys. Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific. Hopefully it'll be more than just me and Arthur. And we will, if you check out the Game Makers newsletter, I will send out the list of 10 news articles that we'll cover on Friday. Should we cover 10? Should we cover less? Is 10 too many?
No, nothing's too many for our
Okay. All right, we'll cover 10. So join us next week. And, you know, if you want us to continue, you gotta give us that like and subscribe, guys. Let's roll. So until next week, we'll catch you later. Have a good week. I know you got an important meeting coming up in 10 minutes, Arthur. So we finished in time.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for your support. We'll see you next week on our first live stream of this podcast.
All right. Bye, everybody.
See ya.